This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Richard and Uma. In a report on police abuses officially released on the 2nd of April 2014, the Human Rights Watch, HRW, said that the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia, Suhakam, and the Enforcement Agency Integrity Commission, EAIC, tasked by Putrajaya to monitor police abuses, were failing to do so. To talk about the report, No Answers, No Apology, Police Abuses and Accountability, we have with us Phil Robertson, Deputy Director, Asia Division of Human Rights Watch. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
So, Phil, before we get into the report proper, if you could just tell us about yourself and Human Rights Watch.
Okay, well, Human Rights Watch is an international human rights organization. It's headquartered in New York, but it has offices all around the world. We have established in the early 1980s. Our motto is tyranny has a witness, and that goes to our methodology of strenuous research to expose human rights abuses and then publicize them to the world to try to name and shame rights abusers wherever they are practicing and abusing rights. So for us, the idea of like exposing human rights is the core of what we do.
Mm. So on the morning of the 2nd of April, you held a press conference to deliver this report, to show this report. What was the reaction like in the press release, the press conference?
Well, there was a lot of press attention to it. When Human Rights Watch brings out a report, media will know that it has been strenuously researched, it's been double-checked, it's been verified. We spoke to many different victims and their families. We spoke to lawyers. We spoke to the police themselves. We spoke to various different external accountability mechanisms such as Suhakam and EAIC. Mm. And we came out with a very comprehensive report that was well received by the press. It was a full room not only of media but also diplomats and others who are eager to see what we found out about the Malaysian police.
Speaking of methodology, how long did it take to compile all of that data?
Well, the research took place over 2 years, 2012 and 2013. Mm. And we had hoped to bring this out a little bit earlier, but there were a number of different delays internal to Human Rights Watch. Everything that we do goes through a legal process, a screening by our legal department, as well as a program department to ensure that what we're coming out with is in line with Human Rights Watch's policy of, you know, focusing like a laser beam on international human rights standards. Mm. We don't have a position politically, you know, and in a politically charged situation like Malaysia today after the elections, you know, a lot of people are trying to pull you one way or the other. And we're very clear that we're all about human rights, full stop.
Right. I mean, there may be the issue that we have here in Malaysia. If you're publishing a report or anything like that, and you are painting a particular group of people or an institution in a bad light, there's often this belief that you are funded by something or somebody that wants to take a particular position. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
What's your kind of response to that?
Well, first of all, Human Rights Watch doesn't take any money from any government. And we also don't take money from any sort of corporation that works in sectors where we are doing research, because we also have a business and human rights section that focuses on abuses by private corporations. Mm. We're very transparent about who supports us, and we work in over 90 countries around the world. So, you know, people are saying, well, geez, you know, in Malaysia, you know, who paid for you, who supported you? We support ourselves. I mean, we do the same thing in Malaysia that we do in other countries in Southeast Asia, such as Cambodia, Vietnam, mm. Thailand, Myanmar, the Philippines. In all these places, we bring out reports and we focus on the specific rights abuses and make recommendations that we hope are constructive, that we believe will, if implemented, result in an end of human rights abuses and will result in accountability for those who have committed abuses in the past. That's all it is. It's pretty simple. There's no hidden agenda with Human Rights Watch. Mm. It's straightforward.
So when it comes to the report proper, let's talk about the people you interviewed and how forthcoming they were. I'm assuming families of victims were relatively forthcoming, but what about our institutions and our government organizations?
Well, there's a mixture of responses there. We did meet with then Deputy IGP Khalid during the research process. I had an interview with him. He's actually quoted in the report. We also met with other police who insisted that we not use their real names because they feared repercussions if they did so. When we sit and talk with an individual, we're very clear about what we're doing. You know, everything has to be voluntarily agreed to. We say that we're going to use this information in a report. And if a person has a concern about being identified, then we listen to what they have to say. And, you know, if we agree that they could face retaliation, the last thing we want is to have one of our reports result in additional human rights abuses. So there were some instances where people refused to be identified, and we agreed to that. But, you know, we have all the information. We have all the interview transcripts, all the private information that we received in addition to government information and other sources. It's all on file with Human Rights Watch.
We're speaking to Phil Robertson, Deputy Director, Asia Division of Human Rights Watch. They recently published a report titled No Answers, No Apology, Police Abuses and Accountability. After this, we're going to be talking about the report proper and just what they found. You're listening to the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9. This is the Evening Edition with Richard and Uma. Today we're talking about human rights. We're talking about a new report by Human Rights Watch called No Answers, No Apology, Police Abuses and Accountability. We've got the Deputy Director, Asia Division of Human Rights Watch with us, Phil Robertson. We were talking about methodology earlier on. Let's get into the report itself. In brief, what were some of the highlights of your findings?
Well, unfortunately, our findings all focus on a lack of accountability by the police for abuses that are being committed by their officers. And those fall into several different categories of abuses. One is shootings, public shootings, unjustified shootings, where people are being shot by the police on the streets or at checkpoints or after car chases. The second category was deaths in custody. People who have been detained by the police are held for a period of time and then end up dead. And third was looking at excessive use of force in breaking up public demonstrations, particularly the Bercy 3.0 demonstration that happened in April 2012.
Was there anything in that report that actually surprised you, or was this something that you were kind of expecting?
Unfortunately, I'm not surprised by the findings. In fact, I mean, these are problems that have happened year in and year out in Malaysia. You know, it seems that every month, somewhere in the newspaper, you'll find another death in custody case, another shooting case. Mm. What I think is most surprising is the lack of accountability within the police force, the fact that the police essentially investigate their own abuses. Sometimes police from the same police station where the abuse occurred are the investigators. And I think also the reactions from the families of the victims, both the anger but also the helplessness before a system where their loved ones are being categorized as criminals, as people who are charging the police with parangs, as persons who are drug dealers or mafia, and essentially being unable to effectively respond and counter those allegations, even when it doesn't fit with what the family knows about the person. Mm. So you saw in some of these shootings where, you know, the police say that this person had a parang and charged them, but all the other witnesses at the scene said absolutely not. And in a number of cases filed police reports saying, no, that's not what happened. But because the police are the final arbiters of the investigation, they use that to close the case. There's no independent oversight mechanism that effectively functions and can step in, or that the families can appeal to demand justice.
Well, we'll get to the IPCMC in just a second, but I think one of the most shocking numbers, because you hear about these cases but you don't do the math yourself, was that only 7% of the cases actually made it to some sort of court hearing.
Yes. Yeah, in terms of the actual inquests. Well, that is quite worrisome, because actually Section 334 of the Penal Code says that in deaths in custody that an inquest should be automatic. Mm. But what we found was really when you only had a significant public outcry would an inquest be called, in part to, I think, mollify the family or to try to buy time as this process would play out. And some of these inquests go on and on, you know, 8 months, 10 months, a year, and often end inconclusively in an open verdict, which means that essentially no further action is going to be taken on that case. And by that time, the open wound that the family feels in the loss of the loved one in some cases has really sort of diminished, and they make their peace with the situation, and the police that were responsible for that abuse get off scot-free.
So in the report, you said that you've spoken to the current IGP when he was deputy, right?
That's correct.
And you when you kind of passed him this kind of information, when you passed him these details that you've seen, you know, you've seen the figures, what was his response?
Well, no, actually, during that period of time, well, first of all, it wasn't me. It was another person from Human Rights Watch that spoke with him. At that point, we were actually data gathering. And so we were actually getting information from them about statistics, about their standing orders, which still remain secret. So, you know, we were trying to get hold of the IGP standing order on the use of force and firearms, which we still have not been able to get.
Because I think isn't that filed under the Official Secrets Act?
Well, there you are.
I think it
and
might
so,
be.
And so, I mean, actually, even if we did get a copy and we revealed it, of course, you know, we could be subject to some sort of criminal sanction. What we were saying, and this is one of the recommendations, was there's a whole slew of these IGP standing orders that are secret. We were urging the police to work with, for instance, the National Human Rights Commission, SOHACOM, to review these standing orders and to revise them to make sure that they accord with international human rights standards. This is something that SOHACOM itself has also sought, but has not received cooperation from the police in that matter. So the police, you know, they effectively deny access to their policies. They investigate themselves, and then surprise, nothing happens in many of these cases.
All right, we're speaking to Phil Robertson, Deputy Director of the Asia Division of Human Rights Watch. After this, we're going to be talking about some global trends, the IPCMC in Malaysia, as well as what's the best approach to actually see some change. You're listening to the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good evening. I'm Uma Panganamke Pagan.
And I'm Richard Bradbury.
And today we're talking about human rights. In a report on police abuses officially released on the 2nd of April, the Human Rights Watch said that the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia, SOHACOM, and the Enforcement Agency Integrity Commission, the EAIC, tasked by Putrajaya to monitor police abuses, were failing to do so. They released a report called No Answers, No Apology, Police Abuses and Accountability, and they said that SOHACOM and the EAIC had little success gaining access to police case files, key police standing orders governing use of force and firearms, and other information required to actually conduct meaningful investigations. Talking to us about that report is Phil Robertson, Deputy Director, Asia Division of Human Rights Watch. Phil, let's talk about some international trends. We were doing some reading, Richard and I, before chatting to you, and what we found was in the UK, for example, the statistical graph is very clear. After an independent police commission was formed, there is a significant drop yearly with regards to abuses and even deaths in custody.
Mm, right.
So it's how...
Not surprising.
Exactly. So is the IPCMC just the only way forward?
Well, we have called for the IPCMC to be established in Malaysia because we believe that the amount of abuses being committed by the police deserve its own commission. Mm. You know, there was a decision instead, you know, in the wake of the Royal Commission by the government to not go forward with the Royal Commission's recommendation to set up such a IPCMC. Instead, we got the EAIC, where the police are lumped in with 18 other enforcement agencies, looked over by an agency which clearly doesn't have the personnel or the budget to function effectively.
Well, it's important to note, last year there was just one guy.
Yeah.
Well, there was, yeah. There was, at one point, when the MACC pulled back some of its investigators that had been seconded to the EAIC, yeah, you were left with one investigator. You know, over the course of now 3 years of operations, they've basically come up with two warnings and one disciplinary action.
And how many reports do they get per year?
Well, they've gotten, as of mid-2013, they had over 460 complaints.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, by any standard, the EIC is failing. Mm. Now, the question is, can it improve? Mm. The current crop of commissioners who have just left office are going to be replaced sometime in the near future by appointment by the Prime Minister. Will he appoint people who are truly independent, who have a background in human rights, who are prepared to stir things up? Mm. Or are we going to get same sort of you know, former diplomatic retreads or you know, mid-level bureaucrats or people from the private sector who have no apparent experience in human rights?
Just to go back to what you were saying earlier on, Uma, about the graph that we noticed in the UK. I mean, the Independent Police Complaints Commission was set up in the UK in 2004. So you'd got this one independent body that was looking at all of these cases that were happening in the UK, 442 between the period of 2000 and 2013. We saw the figures start to drop drastically from around 2003-2004. And what happened is, as these figures continued to decrease, it was realized that the Independent Police Complaints Commission were so effective that what they were going to do was to spread their outlook to look at things like immigration and customs and excise. Mm. But it seems that in Malaysia, we're doing it the opposite way around. So we have the EAIC that's looking at multiple bodies, 19, I think, is the current figure, and then possibly thinking about an Independent Police Commission.
Well, I don't think the government is thinking about an independent police commission. They ruled that out very clearly in the Universal Periodic Review process at the Human Rights Council in Geneva last year. So we're not expecting that an IPCMC is in the cards for Malaysia. We will continue to advocate for it because we think it's the right thing to do. But there's no political will within the government of Malaysia that we can
see. Is that just what you think it is?
Yeah, this is a failure of leadership, both in the government of Malaysia and in the police force, to take the kind of reforms that are needed to ensure accountability and end abuses. Mm. I mean, the lesson from the UK is that real independent and impartial oversight works. That, you know, it will change the culture either by example or by fear that those who are abusive are going to be caught and prosecuted. Mm. You know,
because
what
we have here is still
a cover up. It's a cover up culture here in the Malaysian police.
And of course, the one thing that the UK has that we drastically don't is both pressure from the public and the media. The media doesn't follow through with these stories as often as they should, as much as they should, and the vast majority of the public just don't seem to care. Mm. So how do we shift that around with regards to, at least, you know, for a while in 2013, the first half of 2013, there were a vast number of reports of deaths in custody. And, of course, nothing was followed up.
Which, hold on, hold that thought. And then if we look at how many of local representatives of media outlets were at your press conference this morning.
Well, we had, in terms of the media representatives, we had very good representation from the online media. We had a couple newspapers that mm-hmm. came. So, you know, we'll see what it looks like tomorrow. My view is that the public here in Malaysia, I think, is more concerned about police abuses than they let on. The concern is that, you know, in an unpredictable organization like the police, where you don't want to make enemies, that you don't want to antagonize them, you know, being too vocal can be dangerous. Mm. I think that's the feeling of the average citizen who, you know, don't really have a reason that they want to tangle with the police. In fact, they probably want to stay as far away from the police as they can. But I think if you look at various different polls connected to popularity or dissatisfaction with various agencies of the Malaysian government, I imagine that the police would be pretty close to the top of agencies that people are concerned about.
No, I think they are. They seem to top the list even under corruption perception as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Not surprising.
So when it comes to key recommendations from the report, what outlines have you set out to possibly infect or inflict some change?
Well, I mean, I think that we're going to be involved in a long-term project here to try to affect change in the police and the government to change the culture of this non-accountability. First and foremost is really an external accountability mechanism that actually functions. I think Suhakam is doing the best it can, despite the fact that it's not getting much cooperation from the police. I mean, I met with some senior police representatives today, and they're all about the fact that they have an annual conference and some training programs with Suhakam, which is all well and good. You know, I mean, human rights education is important. But, you know, they're not sharing the information on the cases that come before a Suhakam. Mm-hmm. Suhakam very clearly also indicated that they're highly dissatisfied with the level of cooperation they received from the police during their Bursi 3.0 inquiry. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're going to have to really focus on external accountability mechanisms and internal reforms within the police. It's a structural problem. It requires a structural fix. So we've recommended that there should be an ombudsman within the police who can really get to the bottom of various different complaints that come up, that can intervene, that can and really you know, effectively ensure that investigations are not handled by local police or by the state-level police. We're more interested in a cover-up, and that there's actually some integrity in these actual investigations. We talked about other various different measures that need to be taken in terms of transparency, in terms of changing policies, standing orders, in terms of not objecting, for instance, to you know, second postmortems, which is now a major problem in deaths in custody.
That's right.
You know, people are not satisfied with the initial postmortem, like the case of Sugumar, who was someone who was killed last year. He was found to have died in a heart attack, despite the fact that he was handcuffed by the police and beaten by the police and a mob. You know, the finding was heart attack, you know, and the family wanted a second postmortem, and it was obstructed by the police. And at the end of the day, it didn't happen. He was buried, and now the justice process for him and for his family is basically at a dead end.
Right. When you must come up against quite a bit of resistance when presenting this report to the powers that be. And I'm assuming it's a very pointless dance that gets engaged in, where everyone's shouting in the room but no one's actually listening. So what's the best way to actually get these points across and actually engage the relevant people?
Well, I think ultimately you're end up focusing on trying to find people within the government who actually agree that there's a problem, and then trying to build a coalition of like-minded persons who will then be prepared to raise these issues at key opportunities and put them in front of the power brokers or the decision makers. You know, ultimately, this is a decision that has to be taken at the top of the government. Mm. When you talk about the police, you're talking about one of the most influential agencies in Malaysia, bar none. So, you know, at the top level is where these kind of reforms need to be taken up.
Have you had anybody voluntarily come to you and offer help?
No. No. As I said, the culture of cover-up is still quite strong. You know, and, you know, I had a meeting today. I was supposed to have a meeting with the IGP. At the last minute, he was not available, but I met with a number of his senior officers who were extremely defensive and, frankly, spent a great deal of time accusing us of being biased and not being terribly interested in the recommendations that we made.
And therein lies the problem.
Right.
Well, all the best. I guess one of the key takeaways of this is that you or we can't ever give up, and you just have to keep coming in wave after wave.
Yes, that's right. We do have a waves to the beach strategy. One wave comes after the other, and we'll continue at it for as long as it takes.
All the best. We've been speaking to Phil Robertson, Deputy Director, Asia Division of Human Rights Watch, on the report that they just released called No Answers, No Apology, Police Abuses and Accountability. You can download and read a copy of that report on hrw.org. You've been listening to The Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.